This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
862-8707 or consult the web at www.kpft.org.
I'm Aaron Glantz. From December 29th to January 2nd, tune in at noon for a special documentary presentation, Winter Soldier, Witness to Occupation.
These are the consequences for sending young men and women to battle. These are the things that happen.
Tune in to hear firsthand testimonies of veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as analysis of the rules of war and how they clash with its brutal reality. You'll also learn about the consequences of sending our soldiers to war again and again, the crisis of veterans' health care, and the future of GI resistance.
There's a term, once a Marine, always a Marine, but there's also the term, eat the apple, F the Corps. I don't work for you no more.
That's Winter Soldier, Witness to Occupation, at noon, from December 29th to January 2nd, on 90.1 KPFT and online at wintersoldieriraq.com.
90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Belinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And on this evening's program, we have some interesting stuff lined up. Kelly McCann from AIDS Foundation Houston here to discuss the Red Ribbon Toy Drive. Also, it's been 3 months since Hurricane Ike, and have you got your insurance settlement yet? We have Jose Jimenez from the Project Management Professionals in Houston group to talk about some problems with insurance and what you need to do. We also have Todd Waite. He's the star. He's called Crumpet in the Santa Land Diaries by David Sedaris and adapted for the stage by Joe Mantello. And we're hoping that we're going to be able to have some stuff from This Way Out, hopefully. Everybody's got our fingers crossed, and if you guys at home will cross your fingers too, we'll be able to get it. But in the meantime, while we sort out some other technical problems, here's a little bit of Christmassy music-y.
Kiss me, bring the rum-a-pum-pum.
was the Bayou City Performing Arts, which is actually a combination of the Gay Men's Chorus of Houston and the Bayou City Women's Chorus, and that was recorded as they performed live. This is Queer Voices.
And they'll be performing tomorrow at Jones Hall. And I'm sure tickets are still available. And you can go to their website, which is BayouCityPerformingArts.org.
Very good. And in the spirit of the holidays, we have the lovely CEO of one of my favorite organizations, AIDS Foundation Houston, Kelly McCann. Hi, Kelly.
Good evening. Hello, Brian. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
What are you doing here?
Well, I'm here because I get an opportunity to talk about the Red Ribbon Toy Drive. That is the 14th annual Red Ribbon Toy Drive.
And very good. Let's applaud.
Yes, yes. Moment for applause. We're very proud of this event because, you know, this is something that we started. Actually, the employees of AIDS Foundation Houston wanted to do something for the clients and their children. And so they began volunteering 14 years ago, and it's kind of grown into this community-wide event where we ask members of the community to donate new unwrapped toys for children between the ages of birth and 12. Mm-hmm. And then for the older youth, 13 to 17-year-old kids, we purchase gift cards so they can go buy a watch, a hat, whatever, you know, something they might like.
Now, for our listeners out there, how can they get involved and where can they bring the toys?
Thank you very much. You know, I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and plug stuff, but this is a wonderful, feel-good holiday event.
Absolutely. Toys for kids.
I mean, how do you go wrong? And, you know, one thing I would like to add, you know, The children that we serve are children of our clients. Some of the children are themselves living with HIV and AIDS, but between the ages of birth and 12, those youth, those kids, we serve them if they are infected or affected because they have a family member who's living with the disease. And I want to remind the listeners that, you know, these are people who are living in poverty. 80% of our clients live on $10,000 a year or less. And so these are children who would not have a Christmas, probably, if it wasn't for Red Ribbon. And so we don't have a party where we hand out the toys. We collect them. We give them to the caregivers and the parents. And then that allows them to give Christmas gifts to their children so that Santa delivers something under the tree. And that's very important. And so if people in the community would like to help us out, certainly your cash donations are always welcome at AIDS Foundation Houston. But you may also bring a toy, as I mentioned, unwrapped new toy by our AIDS Foundation Houston offices at 3202 Wesleyan. And that's on Wesleyan between Richmond and Alabama. We're open Monday through Friday from 9 to 5.
So, this is the 14th year.
Yes.
How, in this economic climate, how is that going?
You know, thank you for asking that because, you know, it is disappointing for those of us who work in the nonprofit arena, but economic times impact us greatly.
When you're needed the most.
When we're needed the most. That's exactly right, Jack, because the number of clients coming to our door actually increases during these difficult economic times. And, of course, on the flip side, that's when our donors might not have as much to give. The corporations, the foundations also don't have as much to give because their investments are suffering. And so, as a result, this year we actually took in fewer toys than in previous years. We serve between 800 and 1,000 children every year, and we have over 800 registered this year, and we did not have the bounty of toys we have had in the past. Now, certainly every child's going to get a couple of gifts, one maybe significant and one small gift, but in years gone by, we've had the ability to give 3, 4, and sometimes even 5 gifts per child. But at the very least, you know, we're grateful for whatever people in the community can afford to give.
Very good. So this is your call, listeners.
That's right.
Get out there and bring some toys to needy kids. Help out the community. I mean, what better way to feel good about giving in the season? I mean, this is totally a holiday time and to give back.
That's exactly right. And you know, all of our clients, whether they are on public assistance, whether they are living in poverty, or whether they're lucky enough to maybe have a job and insurance, they're all suffering because, you know, medications, you can't skip your meds 1 month.
No.
You must continue to purchase your medications. You must continue to purchase nutritious food so that your meds can be efficacious.
Mm-hmm.
So there are very limited areas of our clients' lives where they can trim their budgets. And so one of those ways is to trim back on presents.
On toys.
So thanks very much to everyone for thinking of AIDS Foundation Houston and our children.
So you have a whole distribution system of how you get all these toys out?
Boy, yes, we do.
That must be the logic of that.
You know, logistics. I have to credit some of our staff, especially, you know, Mark Cohen and Terry Pratz and Kathy Taylor. And what these folks do every year is we gather from all the various distribution sites. We have a central warehousey type location. And then we start just pulling toys out, and we sort them by age and gender.
Wow.
And then we start bagging them based on the numbers of kids in a family and what some of their ages and maybe needs are. Because, you know, as a former tomboy and current lesbian, it's important to me that we just don't give every 9-year-old girl a doll, because believe me, some of us 9-year-old girls were not slightest bit interested in dolls.
Some of the boys may want the dolls.
Exactly right. If you give the girls a football, you know, we can be gender appropriate.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, that's amazing how the distribution, I wasn't aware of how that worked.
It is. We just did the main organizing this past Saturday, and it's an operation.
It sounds like it.
And I want to, you know, put a shout out to our friends at the Osito Foundation, Rod and his partner, Oscar.
That's a new organization that...
That is right.
It
is
brand
new.
Bears to kids with HIV.
And for those of you who may not be bilingual, Osito is little bear in Spanish. And Rod and Oscar started the Osito Foundation in order to provide teddy bears to children living with HIV and AIDS. And on Saturday, they delivered hundreds and hundreds of bears to us at our distribution site. So thanks to them very much and to everyone who contributed to the Osito Foundation.
So all of these kids are clients, or families are clients?
Exactly. We do have partners with the Texas Children's Hospital, Baylor, and the Harris County Hospital District, Thomas Street, mm-hmm. so that we try and reach out to, if they're not exactly our client, then they're a client from one of our partners. We want to make sure that no child living in a family infected with HIV has to go without at Christmas time or at any holiday time if they are of another religious belief and don't celebrate Christmas. You know, we have gifts for whatever, for Hanukkah, for Kwanzaa, for winter solstice, yes.
And is this in the Houston area? How far out do you reach?
You know, the sad thing, yet one more impact of Hurricane Ike, is that we have always partnered with UTMB and provided toys to the children on Galveston Island. But due to the layoffs and just the complete breakdown of that pediatric care system because of Ike, unfortunately, our partners were not able to accept the toys. They had no way to distribute them this year.
Wow.
So those kids, we lost a few kids that might also have impacted our overall numbers. We probably served about 1,000 last year, and we're over 800 this year, and I think that could be part of it.
Right. So, I mean, we're talking about toys, but the organization is, that's just one part of what you do this time of the year.
You know, it is a great feel-good thing that we do that is not anything we really even budget for. We luckily have a great partner in Reliant Energy and some other organizations. But absolutely, you know, we had our World AIDS Day luncheon, which is an important fundraiser, but it's also an opportunity for us to recognize a member of the community who has made significant contributions to HIV and AIDS. And this year, Brian was at the luncheon.
This was my first year, and I was completely impressed.
Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful event at the Corinthian downtown. And
the beautiful Corinthian.
Yes. Thanks, Jackson.
Thank you, Jackson. And we had the opportunity to honor Mitchell Kateen, who is not only famous in terms of gay rights, but Mitchell and his partner in law, John Neshman, they have donated hundreds of hours to people living with HIV and AIDS to help them with legal issues and really help people restore their lives and battle discrimination. And so we were very lucky to be able to honor Mitchell. Now, the other thing that we do during this time of year, of course, is we plan and execute international camps. You know, Mark Cohen, who is one of our wonderful staff members, he is Mr. Camp. And what Mark does every year about this time, he flies to Africa. Because we sponsor through Baylor International Pediatric AIDS Initiative, we sponsor international camps. You know, we do our local camp here for young people with HIV.
Right.
And then we now have been sponsoring 3 camps a year. I've got camps in Botswana, Malawi, and this year Mark currently He is in Swaziland, kicking off a new camp.
Wow.
So, yeah,
holy
his cow. Passport is something to see.
I bet it is. Now, after the winter, you have spring, your spring events, which...
Yes, this is just Plug City for AIDS Foundation Houston. Thank you all very much. In January the 24th, it's a Saturday, is our Art for Life event, and this is an art auction.
I got the postcard in the mail.
And, you know, this year we're really excited because we're cranking it up a bit. It's going to be more than just the art auction. Not that that's not wonderful in and of itself, but there will be live and silent auction items available. And then we're also going to have a band and dancing, and it's going to be a full-blown out party. So now, we're hoping everyone will come.
That's going to be at an art studio, I remember.
The Vine Street Galleries, yes. I believe the address is 1113 Vine Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great setting. We're going to have Molly and the Ringwalds, the band, performing.
Cool.
And so, yeah, as I said, that's January the 24th, and you can get more information and tickets on our website.
Which is?
Thank you for that. That's www.aidshelp.org.
Very, very easy to remember.
Yes, it is. That's what we do.
Absolutely.
And how does somebody walk into your organization to seek help?
You know, if you are, as happens sometimes with our clients, if you are off the bus from prison, if you are brand new in town, if you have just learned that you're infected with HIV and you need to know what services are available, if you're just seeking information, we encourage people to come to AIDS Foundation Houston. You can just arrive on our doorstep, and just in order to help ensure clients additional privacy, as you who have visited us there know, when you pull into our driveway, take the ramp up to the elevated parking area, and you'll actually enter AIDS Foundation Houston through the back door. And I know that might, there are tons of puns that we could, we could go there.
The wheels spin.
but that is so that you have a little bit of additional privacy in terms of entering our doors. And when you get there, all you have to do is tell the receptionist you just want to talk to somebody, get some information about available services. Someone, one of our client service workers will do an intake. You might see one of our benefits and resource counselors who can say, if you don't need services provided by AFH, which are supportive in nature, rent, utility, mortgage assistance, food, camp, education, testing, if you need medical or something like that, we can make a referral, help you ease your way into the Ryan White care system, mm-hmm. or whatever you may need.
So basically all the AIDS organizations or all the organizations that deal with people affected by AIDS work together in Harris County.
Yes. Now, I will tell you, that is the goal, and we have come a long way in achieving great strides in that area. I think for a while in our community over the past few years or in the past, there's been some territoriality and people were less inclined to make the kind of referrals that are necessary. But we've come a long way, and we have a lot of cooperative agreements between organizations, and we've all decided we want to serve our clients in the very best way.
We're all on the same page.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And we refer to not only other AIDS service organizations, but other social service organizations. We have a network of over 50 other providers that we refer to and take referrals from. So we can be, and we are, a gateway into the community in terms of services.
Very good. You were speaking about the AFH office. Now, I heard on the news there was some shenanigans going on outside. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, and before anybody gets the wrong idea, AIDS Foundation Houston was not involved in the shenanigans. We were victims of the shenanigans. And what Brian is referring to is there is a group of people, there's an organization, we'll say, around town that
air quotes.
Yes, big time air quotes, that's collecting money on the street corners. And I thank you so much for bringing this up, because not only am I and everyone that works at AFH concerned about this, but members of the Ryan White Planning Council, certainly I know some of your colleagues over at Center for AIDS, we have a great concern about this, because this is an organization that is claiming to collect street donations, panhandling, to pay for meds or to do prevention education in schools, and to provide a variety of other services that, frankly, none of us who work in HIV can validate that these services take place. None of us have ever received a referral from this organization or been given information so we could refer a client to
it. Is it an actual organization?
You know, I believe it is. And here's my information that I've learned from, in part, the Channel 2 News investigative reporters. as well as Glenn Corot and some others that are working on finding out some, doing some investigation into this. This is an organization that does have a DBA. So it's registered with the Secretary of State for the state of Texas. And they do have a permit to make solicitations for charitable donations, but that's as far as it goes.
But they're not necessarily a 501c3.
Exactly, exactly.
Nonprofit.
And there's no financial records, because what happens is they don't send in their 990s to the Secretary of State in September, and so there's no official financial record. So we don't know what they're doing with their money.
Where the money is going.
One thing I will tell you is that if you ask the people collecting the money from time to time, who are you working for, who are you gathering money for, they will say the city of Houston. They'll say AIDS Foundation Houston. They'll say anything. But I just want the listeners to know this is not a legitimate organization. There are numerous legitimate AIDS service organizations who desperately need your charitable donations, who will give you a tax receipt so it can be written off for you, and just please do that instead of dropping your dollar in the bucket.
And they've been in front of AFH.
They've been in front of AFH. They were just up here on the corner of Montrose and Westheimer a couple of days ago. You see them all over town. The Galleria, the I-45 North at West Road, Derry Ashford and Westheimer. It is everywhere. And what they do a lot of times is they'll go to homeless shelters, ask the people if they'd like to make a few bucks. They put them on the van. They give them a T-shirt. They put them in traffic. And they say, we'll give you 25% of whatever you collect. And the rest of the proceeds, excuse me, support Calvin Tarver, the head of the organization, pay his rent and pay for a van and some other things. And it's there's just so many better ways to contribute and to help people living with HIV.
Absolutely. That's very bold of them to go in front of the AIDS service organizations and ask in front of the building.
It seems pretty audacious to me, too, I have
to
tell
you. Don't you have to have a permit from the city to actually go out and do something like this?
You do, and there are two types of solicitation permits, and one of them, type A, is maybe more of what they need to get out in the street, but what they have is a type B. So they don't even have the proper permit, but they will show you, we have a permit. They're sure to pull that out and show you. But they don't quite have the, you know, no surprise, but they don't quite have it down doing it legitimately. They find loopholes.
Yeah.
And so thank you for that, because as this new year approaches and organizations are needing money, and as people may be thinking about ways to save some of their tax obligation, you know, send in a donation, please make sure you just give to a legitimate 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and actually that is easy to find out. You can check that out pretty easily. So what's the next thing coming up for AIDS Foundation?
Well, you know, as we close out this year, we're always kind of looking back to see what we can improve upon and looking forward for our new challenges. I think some of the things we have to focus on in the coming year have to revolve around prevention, because as you may have read recently, Houston's rate of new HIV infections is almost twice the national average. That's incredibly disturbing. And so we've got to focus on prevention. We've got to figure out why our messages are not being received by the people who need to hear them the most. And then in addition to continuing on with our prevention education, we have to find better ways to do business on less money, because let's face it, coming year, we're all going to have to tighten our belts. And so we're going to be streamlining some services. No services will suffer, but, you know, we're going to use old letterhead if we have to, pencils down to the nub. You know, we're going to shut the lights off, whatever I have to do to make sure we save money. Certainly, I want everyone to know AIDS Foundation Houston is a financially healthy organization, but the fact is all of us have to raise a certain amount of unrestricted funds every year to help us operate our grants that we receive from the government.
Mm-hmm.
And it is going to be a bigger challenge in 2009.
Now, coming up in the spring, you have your AIDS Walk.
We do. Thanks for that feed. You know, this year, our AIDS Walk is on the third Sunday. It's always been the second Sunday of March.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the city asked us to move the date back, so it is Sunday, March 15th, beautiful Sam Houston Park in downtown Houston.
Now, is this, what year is this?
This is our 20th. Do you believe it? 20 years of AIDS Walks in the city of Houston.
I believe it.
And you know, you think back to 20 years ago, we did not yet have protease inhibitors. We did not have the most effective antiretroviral medications. People were still dying at an alarming rate. The rate of people becoming infected was higher than it is now. So I think, you know, we've made some tremendous strides in 20 years, but we certainly have a long way to go.
Absolutely.
So everyone come out.
And so what's the best way to get information about the AIDS Foundation, Houston?
You know, I think our website is friendly. It's informative. If you have any questions about it, you can always call us. But the first and best stop is our website at aidshelp.org. And then, of course, by phone, we can be reached at 713-623-6796.
Kelly McCann of the AIDS Foundation, Houston, thank you for joining us.
Happy holidays.
Thank you, Kelly.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Lee Moore.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 13th, 2008. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights organizations joined other advocacy groups around the world on December 10th, marking the 60th anniversary of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It was ratified on that date in 1948 by the UN General Assembly, with only 8 member countries at the time, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, and 6 now former communist countries voting against it. While it isn't the law or formal policy, the document is now embraced around the world as the moral authority for the rights and dignity that must be extended to all human beings, including, LGBT groups emphasized in statements this week, sexual minorities.
Meanwhile, a new United Nations proposal calling for countries to keep LGBT people safe has the support of nearly every Western nation, except the United States. Neither sexual orientation nor gender identity are protected under U.S. federal hate crime or non-discrimination laws, both of which are urged in the statement. A Bush administration spokeswoman at the UN said that the U.S. has not signed the statement because it hasn't been finalized, a claim disputed this week by UK gay activist Peter Tatchell. All 27 countries in the European Union have approved the proposal spearheaded by France, which currently holds the rotating EU presidency. The statement is scheduled to be submitted to the UN General Assembly by December 20th. Australia finally signed on this week, and several Eastern European countries, along with Mexico, Nepal, Israel, and Japan, have pledged their support. Two of the world's most populous countries, however, China and India, are not among the countries supporting the statement.
While the total number of countries in support falls far short of a General Assembly majority, there'll be no roll call and no vote on the statement. According to Scott Long of Human Rights Watch, it's neither a resolution nor a declaration, both of which carry more weight. But he said the purpose of the statement is to get a cross-regional roster of supporters that shows these issues have backing on every continent and in every UN region. Long stressed that while the statement implicitly calls for the decriminalization of homosexuality worldwide, as many reports have defined it, it goes much further. It is a very broad statement about human rights violations based on sexual orientation and gender identity, including torture, arbitrary arrest, killings, and discrimination in civil and political as well as economic and social rights, he wrote this week. It is, in fact, one of the most comprehensive affirmations of human rights relating to sexual orientation and gender identity that any international body has seen in recent years.
The Vatican, which is neither an EU member nor a voting member of the UN, denounced the statement last week. A spokesperson then tried to backpedal by saying that the church doesn't support discrimination against anyone, but fears that an LGBT anti-bias statement will pressure countries to recognize same-gender unions. Hundreds of protesters, including a few Italian politicians, challenged that convoluted logic this week at a candlelight sit-in near St. Peter's Square. Some of the demonstrators wore nooses around their necks to dramatize the fact that consensual adult homosexual acts are punishable by death in some countries. According to a report by the International Lesbian and Gay Association in May of this year, more than 80 countries around the world still criminalize consensual sex between two adults of the same gender. In at least 7 of those countries, convictions can carry the death penalty.
Turkey also hasn't signed on to the UN statement, but its Supreme Court has overturned a decision to shut down the country's leading LGBT civil rights group, Lambda Istanbul. A lower court had agreed with city officials' claims that the organization was unlawful, immoral, and against family values. Finally, justice has arrived, Lambda said in an English-language statement following the High Court ruling. As people who face violence, who get expelled from our jobs, who are excluded and isolated, who are denied their legal rights, our voices will now multiply. The group also called for sexual orientation and gender identity to be added to the Equality Clause of the Turkish Constitution. Lambda Istanbul has been in existence since 1993 and has been officially registered for 2 years. They continue to operate during the appeals process.
In the U.S., the Iowa Supreme Court has become the latest to consider a marriage equality lawsuit. The seven justices of the High Court heard oral arguments on December 9th in a case brought by the LGBT civil rights group Lambda Legal on behalf of six same-gender couples who were refused marriage licenses in the state. Polk County Judge Robert Hansen last year struck down as unconstitutional Iowa's Heterosexuals Only Defense of Marriage Act. In the appeal of that ruling, Assistant Polk County Attorney Roger Kuhl argued that opening marriage to same-gender couples would harm the institution of marriage as we know it and discourage procreation. Lambda Legal attorney Camilla Taylor told the court that the ban violates the state constitution's due process and equal protection provisions. Observers noted how frequently the justices interrupted and challenged each attorney's arguments, but said there were no hints about how they would rule. A decision is not expected to be announced for several months.
New Hampshire State Representative Jim Splaine has announced plans to introduce a marriage equality bill next year. New Hampshire already has a civil union law, but its neighbors, Massachusetts, recently joined by Connecticut, allow lesbian and gay couples to marry. Splaine told the Concord Monitor newspaper that the civil union law offers only about 90% of the state-level benefits and obligations of marriage, which leaves gay and lesbian couples without full equality under the law. About 600 same-gender couples have entered into civil unions in New Hampshire.
A New Jersey commission this week released a report saying that civil unions there have been a failure. The Civil Union Review Commission, created when the legislature passed that law 2 years ago, unanimously concluded that the separate categorization established by the Civil Union Act invites and encourages unequal treatment of same-sex couples and their children. As an example, the commission documented cases in which people in civil unions had been prevented from visiting their partners in the hospital. They said only full marriage equality would remedy the inequities. The report paves the way for the Garden State to potentially become the first to legalize same-gender marriage by passing a law rather than through a court ruling. Democrat New Jersey Governor John Corzine has previously promised to sign a marriage equality bill. He issued a statement this week saying that while this administration is focused squarely on the economic crisis for the foreseeable future, it's clear that this issue of civil rights must be addressed sooner rather than later. Leaders in the Democrat-controlled state Senate, however, have indicated that it may be later. Senate President Richard Cody acknowledged that people are increasingly supportive of same-gender marriage, but obtusely told reporters that changes in the law must be made in incremental steps.
In movie news, the film portrayal of the joyful rise and tragic demise of pioneering, openly gay San Francisco supervisor Harvey Milk, starring Sean Penn and directed by the openly gay Gus Van Sant, was named Best Picture of the Year this week by the New York Film Critics Circle. Penn, who was chosen as Best Actor by the New York Critics, won the same award from the Los Angeles Film Critics last week. Both the New York Critics and the National Board of Review have named Josh Brolin, who plays murderer Dan White, as Best Supporting Actor. Milk has also been named the winner of the Producers Guild of America's Stanley Kramer Award, which honors pictures that address provocative social issues. Sean Penn is also among the Best Actor contenders in the Golden Globe Award nominees announced this week, but the film was shut out in all other categories.
Not shut out, but censored this week was the airing on Italian television of Brokeback Mountain, the so-called gay cowboy love story, which won 3 Oscars in 2006. Scenes where the two men first make love in a tent and a later kissing scene had been cut. A spokesperson for Italian state broadcaster RAI claimed that the original plan was to run the edited version, as provided by the distributor, earlier in prime time. But no one apparently tried to get the uncensored version after the broadcast was moved to later at night. Some commentators and politicians questioned the explanation. Former lawmaker Vladimir Luxuria called it preventative censorship, telling La Repubblica Daily that cutting the key scenes was like showing the Mona Lisa without its head. RAI has promised to air the uncut version sometime soon in a late-night time slot.
And finally, there'll be a festively queer footnote to accounts of President-elect Barack Obama's inaugural parade on January 20th. It'll be the first in history to include an openly LGBT group. The Lesbian and Gay Band Association, with members from across the country, will march down Pennsylvania Avenue following Obama's swearing-in on the steps of the Capitol. The band was chosen from nearly 1,400 applicants, according to a press release. About 50 bands usually participate in the procession. The Washington Blade newspaper noted that LGBT musical groups performed on the sidewalks along the route during Bill Clinton's inaugural parade, but none has ever marched in the parade itself. A celebratory statement on the Lesbian and Gay Band Association's website said that their inclusion in Obama's parade is truly our chance to make history.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 13th, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Lee Moore.
Bayou City Women's Chorus performing a cappella, obviously recorded live, as part of the Bayou City Performing Arts Concert. This is Queer Voices.
And another reminder that the concert is tomorrow at Jones Hall, downtown Houston. It's their Christmas winter song, they called it. I guess a lot of people don't always use Christmas. It is their celebration of the holidays that's coming up. I would suggest you see it. Another thing, Milk has opened up to wider distribution here in Houston, playing at a number of theaters, including
Cinemark.
Yes,
up in the Woodlands. Our protest worked.
So if you're out there and you have not seen this movie, please, please, please go see it.
It's very, playing at AMC 30, the Edwards on Katy Freeway, and a couple of other, besides the River Oaks, of course.
Yeah, that's Studio 30 out on the West End for us Westenders.
Westies.
Westies, okay.
Reminder also that tomorrow is Election Day. If you're in State Senate District 17, which is a really, really funny district, it is part of West Harris County, and then it sort of swings around like a comma, hitting part of Fort Bend, Galveston, and over towards Port Arthur.
Yeah, Jefferson County.
Jefferson County. It is a runoff race, and the Houston GLBT Political Caucus recommends Chris Bell for that position. Like I said, it's a runoff race because it is a special election. Nobody got 50% in the November election. So that's going on. What else is going on?
Well, if you haven't had the opportunity to get out, it is that holiday season coming up. There's lots of things going on. Take part in it. I recommend the gay men's chorus tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to it. It's been it's almost like waiting a year just to see them again.
Oh, that's funny. It was like a year ago.
It was just a year ago they're so good and they're so entertaining, and they go out of their way to entertain you, to make you feel good, and not just about Christmas, but about the holiday season in general. So if you get the chance, please go and do so.
You know, I've heard good things about the Santa Land Diaries.
Yes, and in the second hour, I did an interview with Todd Waite, the star of the Santa Land Diaries. And so hang on till about 10:15 or so, and you can hear that interview. I did it, they were in rehearsal, and so I went down
to the
alley.
The roving theatrical reporter.
I went down to the alley, and we set up and did a on-site recording for our show.
And it's a one-man show, right?
One-man show, and he plays Crumpet, and it's just delightful. It's irreverent as far as the holiday season. You're going to laugh, you're going to cry, you'll be offended probably, but whichever the case is.
That's good comedy. It's on the edge of offending you, but kind of making you laugh.
Oh, yeah, and it's playing at the Alley till the 28th. So.
Okay.
Yes, in fact, there's two shows on Friday evenings. Goes Tuesday, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Saturday evenings. Very good show. I did happen to see it on opening night.
Oh, tell us about it.
Look at you.
Give us your report.
Well, I'm, of course, a big fan of David Sedaris, and I remember hearing the original sort of broadcast on Morning Edition a number of years ago. David Sedaris used to be a person who cleaned houses, and he did that usually, or offices, late at night, and then he would write in his journals. And the first thing he sort of really got known for was his Santa Land Diaries. It's about being an elf at Macy's in New York, and it's amazing how you just think of being an elf at Macy's, but how well he writes the story, and just incredible funny stuff about some people being too much into the role, all the different Santas that he worked with, all the different elves. An incredible story, and I didn't know how they can get an hour out of that, but they did a really good job.
Oh. Well, one of the things I didn't realize, that the first in-store department store Santa was Macy's.
Really?
They started it all here in the United States.
Miracle on 34th Street?
Yes. We all can remember that. It's that time of year. There are three or four versions now, depending on which one you see.
Now, how was Todd, the actor, in this play?
It was very good.
You saw the play?
Very good. I finally got to see the play. After I wanted... I did not want to see the play until I did the interview, because I wanted to do the interview from the perspective that I don't know anything about it. And we did talk with Todd a lot about his history. This is his eighth year with the Alley.
He's an excellent actor.
Excellent actor. We've interviewed him here on our show about a year ago for another performance he did, and we talk about that in the interview. And it's just delightful. If you get the chance, he's a great talent. And I didn't realize that he teaches also.
I didn't know that.
And one of his students is now at Juilliard.
Wow.
So that says something about, you know, at least you're able to give away what you've got as far as talent is concerned. So that was just wonderful to know. But if you get the chance, or better yet, make the chance for yourself and to go see the Santa Lana Diaries. Of course, downtown, there's always the same. There's Nutcracker. There is Christmas Carol. So if you want to go to the theater, there's no excuse to do so, except tomorrow night, and you can go down to see the Gay Men's Chorus.
Which is also downtown.
Which is downtown. All of it's right there.
Exactly.
Well, it was interesting that when it opened a week ago Friday, the streets were just packed. And it was like, wow, this isn't downtown. This is like New York.
New York, yeah.
Well, apparently it was the lighting of the Christmas tree downtown that the mayor was doing. Speaking of Mayor White, there is rumors that he's going to be running for U.S. Senate when finishes his term as mayor, which will be the end of this year.
I saw that in the Chronicle. So is
actually the end of 2009. It's still 2008.
That's right. A little bit more than a year from now. Correct. There is sort of rumors or strong rumors that Kay Bailey Hutchinson will resign from her seat in the U.S. Senate and run for governor sometime, we think, next year, and then there will be a special election, we believe, in 2010 to fill that seat, and then there will be a regular election for that seat in 2012, sort of like the Hillary seat in New York.
Oh, absolutely. Speaking of Hillary seats, yes, we've got a whole crowd up there.
Well, and Carolyn Kennedy wants that seat now, she's announced.
I did not realize that she was 51 years old. It was only yesterday she was this little girl on TV in November.
How'd they grow up?
Yeah, they all have to grow up, as we all do.
Let's
not talk about that.
No.
I'm not going to grow up. I'm still 39. Again.
You and Jack Benny.
Well.
Well, there's a number of activities going on in the community. The churches are all having their services. MCCR, Resurrection MCC, has a number of activities going on. A lot of the stuff is listed in Outsmart. Theater Under the Stars, White Christmas. There's another one.
So
we actually had snow last week, and we may have ice tonight.
But in between, we had 80-degree temperature. It's like
Houston.
Snow, shorts, freezing
it
cold.
It is Houston. Guys, that's the way it is.
I love it. It's
you know, you have a long overcoat and mittens in the morning, and you're in short sleeves and shorts in the afternoon.
You know, if we're not wearing shorts on Christmas Day, it's not Texas.
Well, now, I still remember 2004
yeah.
when we had a white Christmas, my first white Christmas. Other people are from other parts of the country, and therefore they may have had one. But
I've only seen snow like four times in my life because I'm a Texas boy.
I still remember, and I can't tell you what year it was, but we had something like 11 inches of snow, and it was just delightful to have it. Of course, no one in Houston knows how to drive in snow except our northern friends who come down, and they're smart enough not to get on the highway with all us crazies.
It's widespread panic, man.
All that traffic. People just running over one another.
They're like, I can go the same speed limit.
Yes, it's only rainwater frozen.
It's that solid water on the road.
Speaking of the holidays, next week Sally Huffer will be on, and she'll be talking about holiday depression, possibly. Some of the cures for that, if you do have that, if you feel sort of a little bit left out, being away from your family and not really feeling welcome to your family. Also talking about some of the services that the Montrose Counseling Center provides. And she's also going to be talking about some of her personal journey she's gone through in the past, 6 months or so.
I think it's ironic that, when people don't have a lot of family around, like, for example, I don't. You have your friends. They become your family.
Yes, they're your family.
Your family of choice.
I think it's ironic that you hear people who don't have family complaining that they don't have family, and people that do have family complaining that they do have family.
Yes. Yeah. What is this statement? I'm going to leave my family and go visit and be with my friends.
Yeah. My partner David is in Nebraska now for the next couple of days, and he's going crazy. I call him, and he's just doesn't know what to do, and he's watching TV. And there, I've never been to Nebraska, but I can only imagine. It's 0 degrees right now in Nebraska. So he's, and so he's complaining about family.
Well, coming up in about 11 minutes or 12 minutes or so, I've got an interview. Everybody that came out of Ike that had any damage to their homes or to their businesses and all, you know, you need to listen. If you're doing something, go get you a cup of coffee, go get something, and then plan on listening for about 15 minutes so we can hear some of what's going on.
Even if you moved here after Katrina, the same thing still applies.
Same thing still applies. Nothing's changed since, I mean, Rita was just as bad, and it's the same thing, and it's a systemic system, problem in the system, and don't give up if you think you've been shortchanged by your insurance company. We're going to get some answers on how you can improve your settlement.
Also coming up next week is J.D. Doyle's Christmas special. And well, he will be doing a bunch of different Christmas songs that he has put together in his compilation.
I'm looking forward to that.
He always has some good stuff. Queer Music Heritage is just always good.
You know, Christmas music gets me in the spirit like nothing else.
I have some CDs of Christmas music that I used to be able to play, but I can't play on the air anymore.
Why is that?
They're just a little bit off color, shall we say.
They're racy? Not quite as colorful, or are
they're
they too colorful?
Too colorful.
Oh.
Oh, Glenn, you're crazy.
These are well-known artists.
Yes, well, let's not have one of those.
Yeah.
A little bit too much for tonight.
Right.
Well, do you have some music for us now?
Well, I have some non-Christmas music if you want to break
okay.
from
that. Okay, why don't you
do that? I can do that for you.
I played with my Barbie when I was a kid. It sure was the most fun thing that I ever did. But when Daddy found out, boy, he flipped his lid. I should have been born a girl. My daddy, he said, are you my daughter or son? And I said, oh daddy, do I have to pick one? Then I'll be your daughter, it's so much more fun. I should have been born a girl. You have to understand I have a feminine side, and feeling soft and pretty isn't something to hide. I like wearing makeup, it covers my flaws. I go get a facial to close up my pores. I dress as a woman, I do it because I should have been born a girl. Although I'm a fella, I carry a purse. I don't get my period, but something much worse. Too much testosterone is really the curse. I should have been born a girl. So who am I? I often sit and wonder. Did nature make a terrible blunder? I just got a letter. I read it and wow, I've just been accepted as a member of NOW. Although I'm a fella, I joined anyhow. I should have been born a girl. Well, I think I have the answer, so that when I get home, I'll look through all the want ads for an X chromosome. I'd love to be female, think I'll give it a whirl. I should have been born a girl.
Thank you.
Larry Block, and the title track from his CD that he released last year called Losing Town. And before that, Miss Kooky, I Should Have Been Born a Girl, another title track, this time from a CD released in 2002.
Join us for a free community holiday concert with Hank Neal featuring praise dancing and wonderful holiday music.
Come, they told me, ba-da-rum-ba-bum.
Monday, December 15th, 2008, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at KPFT Houston, 419 Lovett Boulevard. It's a toy and school supply drive benefiting the Escape Family Resource Center. Monday, December 15th, 2008, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
Well, if you were down here and you own any kind of piece of property down in the Houston area, Galveston, all the way down to the and up and down the coast, when Ike hit, a lot of homes were damaged. Some of them were lost entirely. And then the battle began. You survived the storm, and now you're trying to survive the insurance companies and getting adjustments to get put your life back together. It's been 3 months, and there's still people out there that I know of that are still trying to get their settlements. I know as many other people that I talk with during the day that have had settlements, and they're not enough. They don't even cover what it takes, what it's going to take to repair their homes or put things together. Well, if you've been paying attention to the Chronicle, there have been a number of articles that have talked about just that issue. So what I'd like to do is we're going to take a few moments. I've got a guest here, and we're going to talk about what we can do. Even if you've already gotten a check, settled up in a way, that doesn't mean that's the end of it. Many times people believe that it's the end, but it's not necessarily the end. And we've got an expert in here, Jose Jimenez, and we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what is available to each of us out there when dealing with the insurance company. Jose, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Bienvenido.
For having me here.
Oh, gracias. You're very welcome.
we're bilingual. Well, we're bi.
Well, with that, too.
Yeah.
Now, you have a, I want to get the start off with, you got a website. What is the website?
It's fairtreatmentafterike.com.
Well, that works. And a telephone number.
281-733-9777. Yep. That's a direct line, too, if you have any questions for me.
Okay.
That they can get me there.
All right. Now, the reason that we did that first, so you can write that down, we'll repeat it a couple of times during here, because as we go along, you're out there and you've been working, trying to work with insurance companies, and you're probably hit a dead end, but there's some stuff going on. Now, one of the things I heard today as I was driving around, I heard an advertisement for some company, I think Continental something or another, and they said, call them. You don't need an attorney to collect more money from the insurance company. Call us, basically. Now, what were they talking about? What is this about? Now, is this something you do too?
Yes, that's part of our services, and we work as a educational, we're a consulting group, and we do education. But in the website I mentioned, Fair Treatment After Act, you can learn about the process where you go into it. But the main problem is that the Houston area had not had a storm of this magnitude for 50 years. So a lot of the people that have damages really don't know the process. They really don't know how to go about it. So there is a lot of misconceptions and a lot of myths about the insurance. The basic thing they have to understand is that they have a contract with an insurance company to provide a service. The Ike victim is the customer, and the insurance company does not have the last word. So there are ways to, whenever they present you an offer, if it's unfair or low, or you find out that you can't fix your house with that, you can get help, get a fair estimate, and do sort of a counter proposal. It's just a proposal from them.
Well, but the problem is that, you know, my roof is gone. Yeah, and I've got all this damage inside. My family's practically living on the street. FEMA didn't do anything, and they make me an offer, and I say, "Oh my God, I got to get some money because yeah. I'm like a lot of people. I wouldn't have the resources to stay in hotels or get the emergency work done without." Without that insurance money. And don't they use that as a club against you to get you to settle?
Many of them do. But the insurance companies are in business to pay you as low as possible.
Right.
That's how they're going to try make as much money as they can or get to keep as much money as they can. But the first thing is you get some help because insurance policies are not easy to read. A lot of the things that you have in there, people just don't understand. So what you can do is go to Fair Treatment After Ike and look at how you can, you know, get some help to interpret your policy and what you're entitled to. Because, you know, there's some loss of use that many people don't even know that they can get money to go pay for a hotel. They don't know how to get it. And also, you need help to evaluate. You need professional help to evaluate your damages.
Well, the insurance company sends out an adjuster. He's supposed to be a professional. He's supposed to come out and look at the damage and tell you how much it's going to cost to fix it and what coverage you have. Now, shouldn't that be enough?
Unfortunately, it's not. Insurance companies cannot keep on staff enough estimators to cover a storm of this magnitude. You know, we've got Galveston to Katy and all the way up to the Woodlands. And in the beginning, people said, well, it hardly even hit Houston. But they didn't realize that there was a lot of small tornadoes inside the storm, and there's widespread damage. So they just do not have enough people, and there's a lot of new estimators out on the street.
So what do? They just hire?
They hire a lot of independents. You know, insurance companies have claims adjusting companies, but, you know, they hire a lot of new people and a lot of people that are just getting experience. And the one thing that you have to remember is that it's a matter of perspective. Each estimator is going to apply his or her point of view. And that's what he's going to go with. And there's a lot of damages that they will call pre-existing, or they will say it was not part of the storm, or they will not award enough money in terms of the estimating of the damages to even get market value to repair your home.
Well, there was a scathing article, I think, on Saturday talking about the fact that a lot of the estimates were too low simply because the cost of materials and labor in this area have gone up because of the storm.
Yes, you know, like there was one over the weekend on specifically on roofing. Where,
okay.
You know, they were citing their, the unit of measure for roofs is like a square, 100 square feet. And it used to be $180 to $240. Now it's $240 to $300. You know, shingles, all the materials went up. And it's very important for people to not believe stories until they really check out their own claim.
Well, in my experience has been when I've talked to individual friends who have talked to, you know, they've had this settlement and they, well, I can't do anything more. I found out it costs more, but I can't do anything because I've already taken the check. And
that's a very good point. Even if they have signed, you know, the check and cashed it or signed up what's called a proof of loss, they can still come back and say, you know what, after I got into it, I found out, you know, there were some other things and it wasn't enough to cover it. And you can prove that, and they will reimburse you the money. They will pay you additional.
Well, all right, that may be in one case. But what happens if you have a lot of damage, they offer you some number, and it's about, a third of what it's really going to cost to repair. What do you do then?
That's when you say, you know, you've got to get professional help. And right. So independent adjusters, you know, make sure, you know, find an independent adjuster and that is under a public, what's called a public adjuster firm. We now have in Texas, you know, licenses for public adjusters to help you because you don't have to settle for an unfair or low claim or hire a lawyer. There's public adjusters, you know, we're born of the need of, you know, the insurance company really not doing a disservice for the customers.
So a public adjuster is an adjuster that doesn't work for the insurance company. They work for you.
That's correct. You got to get somebody to represent you.
Does this cost a lot of money?
Nope. No, it comes as part of the package. It's not out of money out of your pocket. And it's part of the, you know, you pay a public adjuster out of the proceeds from an increased settlement.
Now, is that something you negotiate with the public adjuster, or is there a fee set?
There's a fee set up front. He will tell you, you know, you contract for the services, and you will know what you're going to be paying.
Now, is that fee set in law, or is it set
The state of Texas does not allow a public adjuster to charge more than 10% of the total claim.
Oh, so... Because I've heard of attorneys wanting 30% and 40%.
That's correct. That's the normal procedure for them.
So I find a public adjuster and have them come out and readjust the damage. And what do they do then? Tell me what happens.
What happens after that? You know, when you sign up with a public adjuster, they come in and do an independent estimate. From your damages, and then they represent you with the insurance company. From there on, they're your adjuster of record with them. They come up for a reinspection. They walk the property again, and most cases the improvements are significant from what the initial offers were.
Well, now we were talking a moment ago. You said that knowing your options. Now,
yes.
I understand. Okay, you either take a settlement or you got to go get an attorney and sue. So what I'm hearing from you is that we have a third option.
Yeah.
And that is get a public adjuster to come in.
An independent adjuster with a public adjusting firm.
So it's got to be a public adjusting. That's key.
Yeah.
Because they're licensed by the state.
That's correct.
And so they're hired. There's a set fee for whatever.
Yeah, and they
by
represent
the state,
you.
So that's,
see, they represent you throughout the process because when you get your money on this settlement, the check comes in your name and the mortgage's name. If you have a mortgage in your house, which most of us do, and they represent you in making sure that you get everything that's coming to you. Like for example, you know, people don't know that there's a recoverable depreciation on your home. People think that once they went through a deductible and a depreciation, they lost their money. But in many cases, it's not. Once the home is repaired, the adjuster applies for the refund for you.
Oh, so now I didn't know that at all. Because I've heard lots of people talk about that, that they've depreciated it. Yeah, they were going to replace my roof, and it was $200 a square, but they only gave me, you know, $100 a square because of the depreciation.
Yep. So you can recover that. You got to look at your policy and the settlement, and you can recover
now,
that.
Now, does a public adjuster do that for you?
Everything. Once you sign up, they represent you throughout the process. Then you know I think it's very important because there's enough emotional stress already trying to get back your life together and making sure you get back to a normal life. And when they come into the picture, they really take on a lot of the stress off of the handling of all this.
Okay, what are some of the problems they may see? You know, I've had this damage, and I want to do something about it. I want to get it fixed. And so what problems am I going to run into with my insurance company other than they're not paying me enough money?
Slow response, very slow response. And also once they say, you know, there's a settlement is in place, you will get documentation that doesn't match what you're expecting. So it's an ongoing process of making sure that you have the right documentation. See, and the main thing is that one of the options that people don't know about is that you don't have to stop going after what you're that you're required for to fix your house until you either you exhaust the limits of your policy or you're satisfied with the settlement.
Okay, so that sort of sounds like car insurance I've had. You know, until it's fixed. I don't have to be settled until it's fixed.
That's correct. That's another thing that I want to make sure that your listeners out there understand. Many people are afraid that if they challenge the insurance company or bring a counter proposal to them, that their insurance rate will be increased.
Oh yeah, that's what happens when you have to do a car insurance. If I have a wreck,
or they will be dropped. You know, many people are afraid of that, and they will just, you know, I have customers that have been settled over the phone. They call them and they send, you know, they try to get the customer to explain the damages, and they send them a check and that's it, you know.
Yeah,
and
my roof is gone. Okay, here's $5,000.
Yep.
Oh my God.
So it's very important for them to understand that they can continue, being represented until they're satisfied.
So they're not worried about getting canceled?
No,
their insurance canceled?
No,
or the insurance rates going up?
Not at all. You know, the only time I heard of that was when back during Allison that the whole, you know, the insurance came together and asked the state to put a cap on mold because some things got out of hand. But a storm cannot be like a car accident, cannot be pinpointed to the individual. So that's why, you know, people don't have to worry about that.
So it's the circumstances around it. So not to worry that your rates are going to go up necessarily on you specifically. The entire industry may go up, but that's... It's the insurance commission that does that. They have to agree?
They have to agree, and we haven't had a storm like this in many years. You know, things like this happen in Florida where we've done a lot of work, but, you know, they had like four storms in a row, you know, so insurance companies wanted to pull out because they were going broke, but I don't see that happening in Texas.
Now, we now know that people out there, if you've had a settlement, or you think you've had a settlement that doesn't sound fair, you can do something about it. Don't be frightened that your insurance rate will go up or they'll cancel you for some reason, because that's not the system, way the system operates on homes or businesses, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So we're not frightened, but we need to get help. We got to get a public adjuster.
That's correct.
Okay. Instead, forget the attorney.
Yeah. I would say go to public adjusters first and reserve an attorney.
Is there a place to find that?
Yes.
Yellow Pages?
Fair treatment after Ike and the Yellow Pages.
Okay.
You know, they can call us directly at 281-733-9777.
Okay. Or if you want in general information and find it, or to contact you or call to ask questions,
yes,
they can call that number to ask questions about their own setup.
Yep. Or they can, I also, you know, they can email me also at josefairclaims@comcast.net.
Okay.
And
you may get a lot of emails. Because there's a lot of people out there that are upset and disappointed and really have had a rough time out there.
Yeah.
So if you have had a situation like that, or you know someone who has, what's the telephone number again?
281-733-9777.
And your email address so I can hound you.
josefairclaims@comcast.net.
All right. Thank you, Jose Amanez. We've been talking insurance, and if you've got further questions, get in touch with them. If you're like a lot of people I know, they're not happy with what the insurance company has given them. This is Jennifer Renee.
that you breathe the same air I breathe. I want to know all there is to know. I want to know what makes you grow. But perhaps I should start with something simple. Like, what's your name? What is your history? What is your game? What is your pleasure? What is your pain? I want to know what is your name. Maybe we could go outside for a walk, spend some time together, and we could talk. I want to know. The furtive glances you throw my way. I wanna know all there is to know. I wanna know what makes your heart grow. But perhaps I should start with something simple. Like, what's your name? What is your history? What is your game? What is your pleasure? What is your pain? I want to know what is your name. Maybe we could go outside for a walk, spend some time together, and we could talk. I want to know what is your name. We could do dinner and have a good time. Just relax, share a bottle of wine. And if well good stuck out, I will make love that's divine. Oh, I could be your partner, I could be your friend, I could be your lover till the very end. But there's something I should know before we begin. History, what is your game? What is your pleasure? What is your pain? I want to know what is your name. Maybe we could go outside for a walk, spend some time together, and we could talk. I want to know what is your name. What's your name? What is your history? What is your game? What gives your pleasure? What is your pain? I want to know what is your name. Maybe we could go outside for a walk, spend some time together, and we could talk. I want to know what is your name. What's your name? What's your name? What's your name? What's your
name? Roger Kuhn, What's Your Name? From his 2006 CD, Proof. And before that, Calling All Angels, a song performed by Bayou City Performing Arts Singing Live. This is Queer Voices.
The road life of a lesbian singer-songwriter leads to communities of queer musicians, after commentator Janet Mason tells the tale of a gay publisher who helped build a village of queer literati.
A memoir, by definition, is one person's recollection of a time and place, a window into a particular era. Often memoirs are important historical documents, as in the case of Felice Picano's Art and Sex in Greenwich Village, Gay Literary Life After Stonewall. Published in 2007 by Simon & Graf Publishers, this memoir was released nearly 40 years after the Stonewall riots in 1969, when butch dykes and drag queens finally fought back, hurling bottles against the police force's routine arrests and harassment. After Stonewall, gay life came out into the open and a revolution was born. Felice Pacano was part of the 1970s literary revolution that included what eventually became an outpouring of gay and lesbian literature, along with feminists known as the Women in Print Movement small presses. Today, it is easy to take our gay and lesbian literary history for granted. But before this time, with a few notable exceptions, gay and lesbian literature was pretty much non-existent. Felice started a small gay press called Seahorse Press in 1978, and in his memoir he remembers his motivation. "We all knew that if we didn't do something ourselves, no one else would. It was up to us." This kiss-and-tell memoir chronicles friendships and collaborations between small gay and lesbian presses. At a time when poetry was in vogue and audiences were hungry for a literature that reflected their lives, small press publishers with big ideas were figuring out how to make a book, including finding authors, selecting paper grades, designing covers, and in those days, setting type. In his association with other small gay press publishers, Pacano came across the work of lesbian playwright Jane Chambers, known for her gay-positive plays A Late Snow and Last Summer at Bluefish Cove. Jane died in her mid-40s, and her career was short-lived. Writing that Jane Chambers is now considered one of the most important women playwrights in American theater, Pacano quotes Chambers as telling the New York Times, "As we become more comfortable with ourselves, the rest of the world will become comfortable with us." Pacano first published the plays of then-unknown gay playwright Harvey Fierstein. In a classic tale of being in the right place at the right time, Pacano recounts his first meeting of Fierstein in his modest Brooklyn, New York apartment. He describes the gravelly-voiced actor and playwright as gargantuan, over 6 feet tall with broad shoulders, and as someone who had more women's clothing in his closet than men's. Harvey had been earning his living as a drag queen since he was 15 and described how he was raised as a drag daughter by drag queen house mothers. By the time that this small press had published Fierstein's Torch Song trilogy, in which Harvey played a central role, the play had been having a steady run and was well on its way to becoming an epic gay play later made into a movie. The publication of Torch Song Trilogy, of course, was a commercial success, backing the subsequent publication of many more gay and lesbian books and forcing book distributors, who at one time refused to carry gay and lesbian books, to expand their horizons. Throughout Art and Sex in Greenwich Village, Pacano presents a community, indeed a world, that is teeming with passion and intensity in the creation of what is new. A memoir is living history, and in this way, Art and Sex in Greenwich Village continues to this very day, nearly 40 years after Stonewall. And as for the rest, well, that is history too, with us in it, forging forward. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer literature and life for This Way Out.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives. No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
Indigo Girls' Amy Ray brings every voice she has to her third solo offering. She talks about Didn't It Feel Kinder and the political importance of independent music with This Way Out correspondents Dixie Trichel and John Townsend.
Tell us about your latest solo CD.
I'm in a constant process of writing, and I always have my eye sort of on when there's going to be a gap in the Indigo Girls schedule where I can start recording another one, and I'm always writing towards that. I was writing, and I was in touch with Melissa York and Kaya Wilson from the Butchies that I had played with on my first CD, Stag, and we started talking about recording together again and started working with a friend of Mel's named Greg and just checking out his bass plan and his production, and he ended up being the producer. And the writing is just writing that came out of when I was on the road with Emily, and I didn't really think of it as I was going, but in hindsight, I think I was writing a lot about, you know, sort of how to take the high road and what does compassion mean, what does empathy mean, and what does it mean to be able to understand someone from their perspective, have a dialogue with someone very different from you. And
is that something that you feel comes out of you in the music, or do you do lyrics first?
I keep a lyric journal where I'm writing thoughts that are specifically geared towards songs. And I sit down and have my guitar and I start looking through the book and I just play what comes to me with the words that I'm looking at. Dialoguing with someone who feels a lot differently and comes from a completely different place than me, I find that to be interesting, you know, and I find it to be fulfilling, I guess, you know, even though it can be frustrating and you can feel alienated or put down in some way. I think that it's the only way to really understand and get to a place of being able to respect each other and live together. I live in an area in rural Georgia that's pretty conservative. There's a stronghold of people here that are really progressive, but it's a very small group. So I'm really used to being around folks that are in a different place than I am on the political spectrum, and probably in a different place than I am around queer issues and even feminist issues. I just try to talk to them as neighbors and have them talk to me as a neighbor, and eventually I think your walls start coming down and the fear starts going away, and little by little people change. It's different for me because I'm a musician and I get to travel around and kind of have that privilege and protection in some way. It's different from trying to be like a high school teacher, you know, where I live, be out and gay.
You're tapping into the humanity of the other person, which honors our common bond.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal. It doesn't always work, you know.
Right, sure. But you have to make the effort.
I think you do have to make the effort.
You've done a lot of activism work.
One of the main things that we do is a group called Honor the Earth, and we raise money and grant money to Native environmental and cultural sustainability groups run specifically by Natives and run out of, you know, Native community activism. And it grew out of a relationship that we started with Winona LaDuke and a couple other Native groups. We pulled our resources and created Honor the Earth in the early 90s. Now we're working a lot around energy justice issues. You know, we try to support local groups wherever we go that are working on different issues in their towns, you know, more of the grassroots, community-based stuff. So we apply that to the work that we do around queer issues, women's issues, or gun violence issues, you know, anything that we're working on at the time. I mean, they're all connected. We try to see the connection and keep it as a holistic perspective of trying to just change the paradigm.
I think it's crucial that people have that holistic overview and you live your life by that.
It's the mentors that I have. When you're out there working on a few different issues at one time, you start seeing the connection.
You're making some kind of a DVD.
Yeah, it's turned into a longer project than I expected because we keep adding things to it. And I was going to put it out a couple of months ago, but I decided to wait and include touring footage from this tour and sort of wrap up an overview of my three solo records and my three tours with interviews and live footage and, you know, all of the live music. Emily and I actually have a record coming out in late February, so we're real excited about that. And then I'll be touring a lot with Indigo Girls.
It seems like you're constantly in movement. Do you like that?
I like it. I see a time when I won't be as constantly in movement in the way that I am now, which is a lot of touring. I see a time when I'm home probably maybe 25% more of the time and I'm working in my own community more. That's the tricky part, you know?
Yeah.
I talk a lot about the importance of working in your own community, but of course I don't do it as much as I should. So I look forward to a time when that happens.
Is your record company, Damon Records, is that in your hometown?
Yeah, it's in my hometown, and right now this is the main record that's out on the labels. We started it in 88. It was me plus whoever would help me out.
What you're working with is the indie label and grassroots musicians who aren't connected with some of the big corporate recording companies.
Yeah. you know, what I started out as a way to give people an infrastructure and to hopefully teach them to create their own infrastructures, and that's starting to happen. And it used to be really hard, you know, if you're a transgender artist or any kind of queer artist that's making music that's also sort of outside of the norm, you sort of have everything working against you at that point. I think now that is not as big of a hurdle because the gatekeepers are not there. It's not as hard for queer artists. It's hard to break through and to make a living and to get into what people consider to be the mainstream if you're a queer artist. That's still hard. I mean, it's homophobic out there, you know. But you can find an audience and sort of slowly make your way, and you can build on that, and you can be part of your community and honor that part of your life.
The whole trans community has blossomed in these most recent years.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great bands that have been, you know, ostracized from music because they are trans, and they've built coalitions, and they've stuck together, and they've found audiences, and they're stretching beyond that community even, because they're good bands. There's nothing like, well, they're good for being trans. They're just
right.
good. But I think when you're already dealing with something that's so full of oppression, you have to really find your own audience first to get that strength and the confidence. Go outside of your own community and be able to translate into another community and get past people's fear. Coyote Grace opened for us in Seattle at a really big show at the Zoo, where it's an incredibly mixed crowd and very mainstream, I might add. They're a great band, and they don't get up there and say, you know, we're trans, and that's the first thing they say, but they talk about it within their songs. You know, as the audience starts listening, they sort of work into that, and it's fascinating because people, their walls are not up at first because it's a very accessible kind of Americana folk kind of music. Mm-hmm. And then you see the shift, you know, when the trans issue comes up, and then you see the shift back to the comfortableness of people just going, oh, okay, it's important to have artists like that, I think.
Gender's more of a continuum, and it's only recently have people started to acknowledge that.
Yeah, and I think we have the trans community to thank for that.
Absolutely.
I think my gender analysis for myself even was much more easily articulated once I started being more in the trans community and having friends and having that dialogue and talking about our own genders together and how we see them and separate from our sexuality. And it's a great way to free everyone up.
Latest solo CD is called Didn't It Feel Kinder? She spoke with Dixie Trykle and John Townsend. Learn more at amy-ray.com.
I'll rock the show no matter where I go. I am the queen, the diva, honey, don't you know?
She's been dubbed a dyke diva.
I'm just speaking from my heart. I'm just speaking from
and his velvet gravel voice intones hauntingly beautiful songs. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. These are just two of the LGBT voices we featured on Audiophile this year.
Join us as we take a longer listen to our favorite seven on the Audiophile 2008 Year in Review. The last week of December, here on This Way Out.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Lee Moore, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Janet Mason, Dixie Trykle and John Townsend, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Amy Ray performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to postal mail CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 4CCR, Cairns, Queensland, WNRB, Wausau, Wisconsin, KAOS, Olympia, Washington, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, and we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. And now we're going to do something slightly different in the fact that we've actually got this one pre-recorded.
Yes, this is Jennifer Renee. I recorded this interview with Tom Waite, the star of the Santaland Diaries, this last Thursday.
Hello, this is Jennifer Renee, and we're here with Todd Waite, who is the star of the Santaland Diaries. And Todd, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, this is your 8th season with the Alley.
It is. I can't believe it. It seems like
God.
I just started yesterday.
We were trying to figure out earlier when the last time you were on the show and when we interviewed, and I can't remember. We decided it was either 3 years ago or a year ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a little scary.
It's a bit scary, but I'm glad to be here now.
Oh, well, I was looking over some of the history of what you've been doing. You've done 35 shows here with the Alley. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. At least that many, yeah.
And I understand you just finished one, and you're rehearsing for another one while you're doing Santaland?
We opened Santaland Diaries, and 2 days later, we're rehearsing for our next play, which is a great play by Shaw, Mrs. Warren's Profession. So we open that, start previewing January 9th. So yeah, it never stops here. But that's part of the joy too. I mean, we asked for it, we got it. So it's
well, it wouldn't be fun if you just did one and had to wait around for a while,
no,
right?
No, that's what's great about being part of a company. Actually, is you know what your year is, you know what you're going to be able to work on. And you don't have to go auditioning all over the country. And you can actually have plants that keep living, pets and things like that.
Well, I understand now you're from Canada originally.
Originally, I became an American citizen 3 years ago on my best friend's birthday.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. But originally I grew up in Vancouver. Oh. Spent a lot of time in Edmonton doing my graduate work where it was minus 40 degrees. So as for this cold, suck it up, everybody. It's not
wait
that
a second.
Bad.
Well, I'm a native down here. This is our winter. Don't knock it.
Oh, no, it was beautiful going out in the morning and seeing that snow. I missed it. It was great.
Now, what brought you down to the United States from Canada?
The Alley Theater. It's one of the three or four theaters in America that would be known and recognized by other actors in other countries in the world. It's one of the oldest regional companies in America. It's really respected outside the country. So I came down, and I am so happy I did. In fact, I went away for a brief sojourn with Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And although working for Cirque was a wonderful experience, I could not wait to get back here and to the Houston Theater.
Well, Houston Theater has a good reputation in many ways.
It does. Well, the whole art scene has a good reputation. I think, you know, the symphony, the ballet, it's an amazing art scene.
Well, now, I also understand that you teach.
I do.
Also.
I love teaching. I love it.
Yes.
I think of it as a vocation. I mean, I had the opportunity to make a thank you speech for an acting award, and everybody I thanked were my 6 teachers. To me, the greatest profession, actually, if I had to pick one, is teaching. My teachers were heroes for me. They changed my life. And I feel very strongly that teachers need to be treated at schools with respect, both in terms of how students teach them, how they are treated by the community, how they are recompensed in their pay salaries. I also think teachers should be held to account, and that there should be rewards for good teachers, and bad teachers should be out of the system and out of our children's lives. But I really believe in teaching. Being a gay kid and a child when sometimes people are a little alienated, less so I think now, but at a certain stage, and just having a teacher who comes up and says, hey, you did great today, you look great, or how are you feeling, the sensitivity to not just the subject they teach, but to everything. It's amazing, as children, we can read one Grimm's fairy tale and it can change our lives. And as adults, if we don't stay open, we can read, you know, all of Tolstoy, James Joyce, and Shakespeare and have very little change. Mm-hmm. So I think teachers are great in that they stay open and they help us stay open.
And I agree with you entirely. One of the things that I remember so vividly from my own life was that little compliment from a teacher that you looked up to, you really wanted to do well.
It's so
And they
important.
Said one little thing. You know, I can still remember some many, many years ago that one compliment that made me go on to do whatever. It's not necessarily the theater or whatever it may be in your life, but that one teacher. So I agree with you so much. But you've had some of your students go into Juilliard and all?
Yes, I have a wonderful student, Audie Thornton, who actually worked here in Christmas Carol and worked at the Alley as a young teenager. And then she started working with me for a few years, and we picked her pieces to audition for Juilliard, and now she's in her second year, and she's doing wonderful work. And Matt Hune, who was at HSPVA, so had a lot of great teaching there, came and did The Goat with us, and then he just graduated from DePaul, played Hamlet there, and is going to do wonderful things as well. And I have many other students who are, I'm very proud of them. Obviously, it's their talent that's getting them where they are, and they've been kind enough to let me be a bit of a steward to some of that, and it's been very rewarding. You know, that is true. Not to speak of myself, but all teachers, it just bugs me so much when people say, oh, well, you know, you can't teach acting, or you can't teach. It's such an idiotic statement, because what they're saying is you can't teach talent. Well, obviously, but it's like mathematics. Certainly you have to have a mathematical brain to do math at a world-class level. But there's no mathematician that didn't train with math teachers. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe there's a few exceptions. But of course it's true you can't teach talent. But talent needs nurturing, it needs direction, it needs sculpturing, it needs guidance, it needs nourishing. So, yes, you can teach acting and any other subject.
Well, I honor in college my drama teacher. I was feeling at the moment that I'd, you know, not done well, and I was feeling bad about myself and my performances. And she looked at me and said, you know, if you don't have the talent, you can always be a professional. Show up on time, prepared to do what you need to do, and do the best you can. Because there's so many opportunities for the professional to fill in somewhere else. You don't have to be the star to not be part of the production.
Absolutely. And honestly, I mean, I've been very lucky in the opportunities people have allowed me to have. But honestly, it's not about that. It is about the process of being involved in the arts. I remember as a teenager reading a wonderful sonnet poem by Wordsworth, which part of the lines are, the world is with us too much late and soon, spending and getting, we lay waste our powers. And I mean, my dad was a lumberjack and a ditch digger, an ice packer on a fishing boat. I grew up in a town you could only get to by float plane or barge.
Oh, wow.
And my dad said, son, I don't give a good damn whether you're a doctor or a ditch digger, whether you do it as best you can and are happy doing it. And the whole thing about arts, and I encourage anyone who's interested, go into arts because it's the arts, not because it's you. As Stanislavski said, love the art in yourself, not yourself in the art, so that it becomes, your whole life becomes a process of trying to do your best. It's not the end product. And people in schools, that's why I'm so hyped about Obama winning. Because years ago, Obama gave a speech saying, when I was a kid, we had art and music as just a normal part of our curriculum.
Yes.
You know, it's what, if everybody had enough to eat and clothes and a roof over their head, what would they spend time doing? Well, that's when you move into the arts, into the creative expression of yourself. And it doesn't matter whether you're brilliant at it or not. I love the fact that the word amateur comes from the French word amateur, which simply means lover of it.
How wonderful. I did not know that.
Yes, so do it for love. Don't worry if you're going to be paid for it or not. And some of the best people are amateurs.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you were quoting a poem, and one of them for me from Kipling is, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you. That has carried me a long way.
Well, especially, and that's a great poem for the Queer Voices community as well, you know, going forward. And any teenagers that are having a tough time hearing it, just keep your head, even though everyone around you is listening.
Absolutely. Well, now we've covered a lot of things. Let's talk about Sandaland Diaries.
Sure.
And you're Crumbit.
Right.
You've got a big cast. You.
Me.
Now, I was interested to see that. I haven't seen it, and I had the opportunity, but I passed on it so that I could interview and ask some questions that somebody that doesn't know anything about it could ask.
Oh,
and that
great
is,
idea.
I did read in the information, it's based on some true stories.
It's based absolutely on David Sedaris.
As an elf?
Sedaris.
Yes.
Right. I think he worked a few years, maybe 3 years, as an elf in
Macy's
Santaland. And, you know, Macy's actually established the idea. He had the first Santa in a store. The whole idea of Santa and Christmas was sort of regenerated at a time, terrible time, in England with war and strife and famine, and Dickens' novel came out because he wanted to bring back the spirit of fellowship that had gone, and then that became a bit of a tradition, and it was brought over by Macy's, basically. It was the first Santa to be in a store, the largest store in the world.
That's wonderful. I did not know that.
Yes.
Thank you for that bit of history.
And it's kept going since then.
Now, tell me about the Sandaland Diaries.
Sandaland Diaries.
What can I expect when I come?
A little irreverence, a little naughtiness, a little combination of a bitter elf and anti-Christmas perversion, along with some humanity and love and just a good time.
Well,
an hour of fun.
Well, I saw the photograph, and you looked ever so mischievous in your costuming.
Oh, no, that's just me.
Oh.
That's what I wear home.
Well, you do it so well.
Yes. David Sedaris, for people who know him, is a very wry, detailed, accurate observer of life, with a tendency towards cynicism, but with a hope towards that things will be better, but not always coming out on the glass half full side, but in the funniest way. He has many, he's won an Obie Award for his off-Broadway work. He's won a Grammy Award for his spoken words. He's had many bestsellers. And this is, he wrote for NPR Radio in 1992, I think, is when he read it. And it became an instant classic. And then Joe Mantella adapted it for stage. And it is just destined to be a classic, because it's a real antidote to people who have maybe seen the other shows enough, or in combination with it, or, you know, that kind of thing. Or they can send the gentle-spirited that day upstairs to see Christmas Carol, and they can come, you know, have a bit of eggnog with some lemon twist.
And enjoy it. I've spoken with several people who have already seen the show. It's a delight, and get ready to do some laughing. Great reviews from my friends who have already seen it. And,
now that we've talked,
then I'm going to get my chance this weekend to go see it.
Oh, good.
And it's here till when?
It's here until the 28th of December, and we play, there's an unusual time for the show, so people should know that are used to coming to the Alley. On Friday nights, we have two shows, not just one, and they're 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock.
Okay.
And then there's a matinee, as always, on Sunday, but no evening show on Sunday. So it's eight times a week, it's just not Sunday night or Monday night, and we're selling really well, so get those tickets now.
Well, how do I get my tickets?
You phone the Alley Theater. The box office number is, you can phone 713-228-9341 and then press 1 for box office. You can also order tickets at www.alleytheater.org, and that's theater spelled R-E at the end, alleytheater.org. Walk right up to 615 Texas Avenue and get them at the box office. They're always happy to help you there.
Thank you. Well, we've been talking with Todd Waite, the star of the Sandaland Diaries. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays, everybody.
This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.